Hello, you're listening to Fresh Wellness with Lisa Shebeck, and welcome to my podcast. A homeopath by trade, with the aim of helping you discover health, natural living, and alternative therapies to bring you down the rabbit hole. That's good. In this episode of Fresh Wellness with Lisa Shebeck, I speak to Sapna, also known as a wild homeopath. We talk about Sapna's speciality in fertility, pregnancy, birth and beyond. Sapna shares her own personal story of infertility and how her first child was conceived via IVF. She talks through her turnaround in health and her natural subsequent pregnancies and shares her thoughts on the increasing infertility epidemic, what people can do to improve their health, success stories, her favourite remedy, which is rainbow, and why people need to take more self-responsibility in all areas of their life.
Sapna, thank you so much for coming on. I'm very excited to speak to you today. So you, Sapna, specialise, although homeopathy is obviously treating the individual, you have a special interest in sort of infertility, pregnancy and beyond. Can you tell my listeners a little bit more about you and what you do?
So basically, I help people get pregnant. I support them during their pregnancy and during their birth. And I think, like a lot of homeopaths, the reason why I started doing this is because of my own personal experience. So my first child was an IVF conception, and we spent 3 years trying to get pregnant and couldn't. And at this time, this is like a different life for me. So I was a completely different person. So I was drinking loads. I had like a really stressful job. I did no exercise. I was basically your typical like version of unhealthy. That was me. Everything like you could throw at a person to kind of imbalance them, that's what I was doing. So, and also the other thing was I took no responsibility for it. So I kind of, you know, pushed with the GP, said, right, we need to be referred for IVF. Went, you know, got referred. And went to this, I guess it was like a presentation, this really weird clinical presentation where we were in a room with maybe 8 to 10 other couples. And they gave us some PowerPoint presentation. And I've got no idea what they said to us. But I remember leaving with this purple bag full of hormone injections and a couple of bits of paper. And it was literally like, off you go. But by the way, because it's November, don't start now because we're closed for December. It was really weird. Yeah, because they closed over December. So it was really, really weird. And I thought, right, okay. Went home, threw the bag open. I thought, oh, what are these little bits of paper? I better read them. And there was like a list of risk factors for the child who is conceived through IVF. Diabetes, heart disease, cancers.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's mad, isn't it? I didn't know it either. And if I hadn't picked up that paper and read it, I don't think I'd be here talking to you right now. So I read this and I thought, oh, this is a bit weird. But now I'm in this state. Okay, we're just going to have to, let's go for it. And then I'll think about how we look after him later. But at the same time, I thought something in my head was like, you can't just go for the IVF and just expect it to work. So I completely changed my life. I stopped drinking overnight. I went to yoga 3 times a week. I kicked back at work. I was in a super stressful job, but I just kind of, you know, took it really easy. I changed my diet. I got rid of the microwave, stopped with the microwave stuff, and started wearing gloves for cleaning and stopped wearing any form of makeup. And I thought, okay, you know, if I can do all this stuff, then there's a higher chance of the IVF working, because they're telling us, oh, you know, there's a 21% chance of it working at this stage, and there's a 30% chance of, you know, it working overall. And I think what was driving me at that point was finances, because it was free. We got one round free, and then, you know, it was £10,000 a pop after that. And I didn't have
so £10,000.
So
expensive, yeah.
It's crazy. So went through it. It worked first time. Great. And then came, you know, got pregnant, brilliant. And then also not thinking about the pregnancy, In my head, I was just going to totter off, go and have a C-section, have my baby and get on with life. Luckily, I started off with a pregnancy yoga teacher. And this is the universe working for you. This is exactly the universe working for you. I was walking to that class, talking to my sister, saying, oh, I'm kind of thinking about home birth, but no, I'm not having that. I'm just going to, you know, carry on down the hospital route. Got there. An independent midwife was sitting there talking to us about hypnobirthing. I left that class, rang Ravi, and I said, right, we're going to do hypnobirthing. That's what we're going to do. Serendipity worked again because everyone else in that group delayed their hypnobirthing class. So I said to Kemi, why don't you come to our house? And, you know, because we're the only people. She came to our house. She said she wanted to go and eat a sandwich in her car at lunchtime. And I was like, you are not doing that. Sit down, woman, and we are going to feed you. And that was it. We formed like a really, really good, strong relationship, a really strong bond. She wasn't our independent midwife at that point. She was just our hypnobirthing teacher. Mm-hmm. Had some complications because they started trying to coerce us into induction. Long story short, Ravi convinced her to become our independent midwife. I had a water birth, which was beautiful. Then got some coercion afterwards because we declined the vitamin K induction and had to stay in hospital for a little while. And I said to Ravi, if we ever have another child, I'm not going anywhere near a birth centre or a hospital. I don't care what's happening. I'm going to take control of this. And I think that was the point where I actually started to take a bit of responsibility and control about what was going on in my life with regards to children, with regards to health. And that's where the journey started. Now, the weird thing was, so a lot of people, a lot of homeopaths that I talk to, in fact, most of them, they say that they went into homeopathy because their child got treated or and they saw how amazing homeopathy was. That didn't happen to me. What happened to me was,
I love this. So what a U-turn already, before you've even had your baby, you know, you've kind of gone from, well, I can relate, drinking, stressful job, all of that, to already like super healthy, great mindset, you know, which is brilliant. So yeah, tell me how you found homeopathy, please.
So then so going back to that list of risk factors, I thought there's been a lot of intervention in kind of actually conceiving Zor. So I need to make sure that there isn't kind of, he's not over-medicated because of all these risk factors. But if he's not over-medicated, what do I need to do to make sure he's healthy? I mean, obviously the food, the diet, you know, making sure he's outdoors a lot and all of that sort of stuff. This is what I was thinking about. But I thought, what if he gets ill? What am I meant to do? Now I joined the Arnica Network on Facebook, and I kept hearing all these people going, oh, homeopathy, homeopathy, I'll give him this remedy, give him that remedy. And I thought, what is this? So I didn't even know what Arnica was, nothing. I knew nothing about homeopathy, but I said to Ravi, oh, they've got this open day at this college in London, I'm just going to go and see what homeopathy is all about. I just want to learn a little bit more about it, and I'm sure they'll be able to tell me. It's going to be about 2 hours or however long it was. I think it was 3 or 4 hours in the end, wasn't it? I can't remember. And I got in there and I can't remember what Marcus said. But the minute he stopped talking, I thought, I'm going to sign up for this 4-year course. And that was it.
But talk, I'm just going to go find out a little bit about homeopathy to, I've just signed up for a 4-year course. Talk about diving in at
first. And I walked out, because Zor and Rav were in the park waiting for me. And I walked out and I said, yeah, I've just signed up for this 4-year course. Rav was like, what? I said, I think this is what, you know, I think this is what I've been looking for. Subconsciously, I hated my job. I hated it. And I thought, subconsciously, I think this is what I've been looking for. I think this is it. And that was it. 4 months later, I started. Never looked back.
I absolutely love that. And do you know what though? I really, that's so funny. Like your husband, like with the baby, must have been just, what the,
Because it's my youngest was only just turned one when I signed up to do the course, and it's very hard to juggle young children and working with this very like intense course. And it's, yeah, obviously you have a very supportive husband, and that's amazing that you know 4 year course. I love it. I love seeing the look on his face.
It's hilarious. But then even during the course, like Rav and Zor used to come with me every weekend, and they used to spend time in the town. And then I got pregnant, which was, and this, no, I have to talk about this actually. I'm not going to just pass over then I got pregnant, because we didn't think we could get pregnant without the IVF.
Yeah.
But I got treated homeopathically, you know, and I remember sitting with my homeopath saying, I want to try and see if we can get pregnant naturally. They freeze the eggs for you for a year for free. And then they send you an invoice and a letter saying, would you like to carry on freezing your eggs? And I said to Ravi, I don't want to do this anymore. Mm. I don't want to go through, you know, all of this clinical, you know, the opposite of intimate way of conceiving a child, because I think all that emotion and the intimacy and the love that you bring to it counts for something. Mm-hmm. So I said, let's ask them to destroy the eggs and let's just go for it without any kind of form of intervention. Honestly, we literally looked at each other and I was pregnant. It was insane. It was insane. You know, coming from 3 years not being able to have a baby, and then, oh, you know, by the way, I'm pregnant. And I remember the day, I called him. Actually, it was the last day of college. So everyone had gone off to have drinks, and I went, and I thought, you know, I feel a bit different. There's something a bit different about me. I wonder if I'm pregnant. So I thought, I'm not going to have a drink. I'm just going to have some water. Mm. And then I went to my mum's house afterwards. We had like a big family gathering. And on the way to the station, I popped into Boots and bought some pregnancy tests. As soon as I got to my mum's house, I ran into the toilet, did a pregnancy test. It was negative. And I was like, okay, it's fine. Shoved it in my rucksack and forgot about it. Next day's Monday, Rav's at work. And I'm sitting there talking to Zor, who was about one at this time. I think he'd just turned one. No, he was two. So we were sitting there just having like a little conversation. I was like, shall I do another test, Saul? Let's do another test. And he's like, yeah, yeah. So I pull out this test, go and do the test, and I'm pregnant. And I think she's like, what? How is this?
I love it.
I rang Ravi up and I said to him, hi. He said, hi, I'm pregnant. And for 10 minutes, it was literally like, I'm pregnant. What? I'm pregnant. What? I'm pregnant. What? I was like, can we stop the record now? So the difference is amazing. Yes, all those lifestyle changes made a huge difference, but also the homeopathy made a huge difference. And it wasn't, you know, like we both know homeopathy isn't about kind of focusing on one thing. It's about improving people's overall health. So, you know, they're better and they're healthier and they can kind of get on with the things they weren't able to do before. So that's what my homeopath did for me. She improved my overall health.
Mm.
And then my body was like, yeah, you're healthy now. So now the priority can be kind of, you know, reproduction rather than dealing with your stress, rather than dealing with the fact that, you know, your gut's all over the place and all of that stuff. So, it was amazing. And then when I got pregnant with Heron, exactly the same thing happened. Just bam, pregnant.
I love it. What a lovely, hopeful story, though, you know, to show as well that the improvements you can make, you know, that how you struggled for 3 years and had the IVF, you know, and then with those changes, it's really inspirational. So now you specialise, do you just treat mainly infertility, pregnancy, your babies? What's sort of your area now with homeopathy?
Well, yeah, that's what I became really interested in, because as part of my journey, I learned an awful lot about birth. And again, it was about taking responsibility, because, you know, I learned about the high rate of interventions,
mm-hmm.
how it can kind of cascade very quickly into a situation where you're in emergency C-section, then the trauma associated with that. And I started to learn a lot about what physiological birth should be like. So all the things that we're told, you know, that are an issue, like, your baby's breech. Oh, you know, there's not that much amniotic fluid. Oh, the baby's in distress and all of that sort of stuff. So we're going to talk about these separately. So firstly, the breech thing, that's a normal birthing. That's a normal position for a baby to be in. What's happened is they've lost the skills to be able to deal with that. So the way they healthcare professionals compensate for that is to say you've got to have like a C-section. That's the first thing. A cord around the neck. There are videos all over the place with babies with their cord around the neck. And as soon as they're born, you can really easily unwind it. It's not that serious. And then the thing with the, you know, baby's heart rate dropping, when you're having like a contraction, the baby's heart rate does drop. That's normal and natural. But what ends up happening is it becomes a medical emergency for no reason. So this is really where my journey started from, you know, what I'm interested in and what I want to treat. Because I thought this isn't necessary. I want to be a birth educator. I want to kind of marry homeopathy with that in order to kind of help more women. And that's how it all started out. And then I thought, well, actually, no. Because that's almost like, and I call it the earth side journey. That's what I call it. That's the end of the earth side journey. We need to kind of move back a step. So then I started thinking about pregnancy, because there's a lot of coercion. There's a lot of fear mongering in pregnancy. It's become, you know, it's so misogynistic the way it is right now. It's, you can't birth. You couldn't possibly, you know, the reason every single one of us is here is because women have been birthing their children for centuries, since the beginning of time. But now what I hear from a lot of women is, you know, I don't know if I'm going to be able to, I'm not sure, oh, I'm carrying a really big baby, I don't think I'm going to, you know, need help. And it's kind of turned off our power, you know? And when you're talking, again, this theme about responsibility, it's almost, it's not delegated, because that would be kind of saying that a woman's giving it away, but it's almost taken. Because if you are kind of relinquishing that responsibility and you're so scared, then it's easy to take the power away from you. And that's what I think a lot of women are in that state now, because they're scared. And you have scan after scan for whatever tiny little thing. And what that does is just make you more and more anxious. And, you know, so I thought, right, homeopathy can help much more at this stage, because it's more preventative at that stage than when you get to birth. And I think at this point I need to talk about a couple of things to do with that I've learned about homeopathy and pregnancy. One of the things that people say is, if you've got a breech or transverse, a baby, give it a pulsatilla 200. I've heard that so many times.
Yeah, I've heard that. I mean, I don't sort of really treat infertility or pregnancy, you know, I don't attract those patients, but I've heard of that. That seems like, you know, I was thinking as soon as you said breech pulsatilla, that's, I'm interested.
See, this is what I feel about that. I think, well, you're actually kind of buying into this whole thing about a breech not being a normal presentation for a child. Why are you treating that? Unless there is a pulsatilla state of the mother, then there's no reason to give that pulsatilla 200. Instead, there should be an education. And this is what Hahnemann said, you know, it's about getting rid of those obstacles to cure. It's about kind of educating yourself and doing the right things in order so you don't get in a state where you need homeopathic treatment. That's one of my bugbears. It's a real bugbear for me, because I've seen it on so many forums. Everyone's like, pulsatilla 200, pulsatilla 200. And I'm guilty of doing it a couple of times as well. But then I stepped back and I thought about it, and I thought, no, you know, we need to, A, educate people that breech is fine. And if they want a natural birth, to find someone who is going to support them in that birth. And there are so many people out there that do that. And secondly, we need to remember what homeopathy is about. It's not about, here is a remedy for this thing. It's for, you know, it's for a whole picture. And the second thing I have a real bugbear about is it's almost like a protocol for induction. homeopathic induction of colophyllum and sinusifuga. This also is a real bugbear for me, because what it's teaching people is you can just get your baby to come whenever you want the baby to come. But no, because there's no such thing as a 40-week gestation. Varies for every single woman. And, you know, women who say, oh, is there any homeopathy? Is there any natural things that I can use to help my baby come faster or help my baby get out? That's just buying into this 40-week nonsense number. So, you know, can you see how it's kind of moved into that territory?
Like allopathy, it moved into conventional, let's treat the symptom or the label. Or, I hate protocols personally. Yeah. But I just think for me, it's always treating the individual, and any symptom that's there, it's because the body has an innate wisdom. So maybe, I don't know, like maybe the baby is in a breech position because they need to be in that position because it's comfortable, or maybe you're overdue because it's not quite ready to come out yet, the baby. You know, there's a natural wisdom, and we try and make everything fit in a box. And yeah, I don't like that.
And we're not factories. We're not human factories. You know, some women go to 10 months. Some women kind of at 37 weeks, you know, spontaneously go into labour. So I think it's really important to kind of remember that with homeopathy, and when you're kind of thinking about its uses in pregnancy. And interestingly enough, recently I listened to this Instagram live with a birth worker called Mahal Musa. And I think she lives out in New Zealand. She's amazing. But I realised that there are so many parallels between homeopathy and birth that it's one of those moments where the universe just kind of clicked into place, you know. Birth is about energy. Homeopathy is about energy. And birth, you know, when they talk about contraction, it's so clinical, and they've boiled something that's so complex and so beautiful down to a movement of muscle. Because this is what she said. She said, you know, you talk about contraction, but your muscles are contracting, your cervix is dilating, your baby is descending, and you as a woman are expanding. And then I thought, yeah, that's a totality. That's a totality of what is going on there. And that's exactly the same as homeopathy as well. And it kind of brought me back to when you're looking at that, you can't do the, oh, here's something for induction and here's something for, you know, breech presentation. So I got there, and then I thought, well, actually, I had IVF. So really, what I need to be thinking about is right at that moment, at the beginning of what happens at conception and what leads up to conception. And that is what I want to treat, and that is what I want to help people with on their journeys. So that's how I got to where I got to.
I love it. I absolutely love it. And what amazing story. And also just how, I mean, I think so much help is needed now, because there is just more, you know, infertility is rising, isn't it? And people live such stressful lives. And before we came on here, you know, I was saying to you just before we started recording, just how, you know, if we could heal ourselves and get into ourselves into a really good state before we even have children, you know, how much healthier would they be?
Totally. Yeah, definitely. But I think the problem is people don't come to homeopaths as the first point of call. They get, you know, they spend, from an infertility perspective, they spend years and years trying to get pregnant. They've got, you know, all the bits and pieces that you end up doing conventionally. They end up doing IVF and fail the IVF. And then it becomes really financially burdensome, and then they start to look at other ways, because clearly that way is not working. And I'm going to put it out there right now, the reason that way is not working is because you're trying to force something. You can't force things to happen. You can't with your body. Your body is saying to you, this is not a place to get pregnant right now. I'm not ready to get pregnant. There is a whole priority list, and, you know, depending on the situation you were in, reproduction is going to be at the bottom. And, you know, it's quite easy to understand, I think, because if you think about, everybody knows about fight or flight, don't they? Everyone said that phrase. If you're in a state of fight or flight, you're in a state with high adrenaline, you are in a kind of state of danger. If you're in a state of danger, you're not going to be growing a baby. A baby is a safe, kind of comfortable environment in which to grow in. And I think the problem is, if you have got a hormonal imbalance, which is what most people have, most people who come and see me have got hormonal kind of issues or imbalances. If you've got that, you're not in the right place to conceive a baby because your hormones are off. That's the symptom. It's saying, fix me first. Whatever is causing this imbalance, fix me, then you can grow a baby. And what ends up happening is the IVF is just trying to force that issue. That's only got like a 30% success rate, because you're trying to force something, your body's not ready for it. It's really complex. It's not just about injecting yourself with hormones. And, you know, a lot of people go on the natural IVF. There's nothing natural about it. I'm going to put that out there as well. Natural IVF is where they kind of, instead of injecting yourself for 30 days, they change the hormones based on the hormones that should be produced at that particular point. There's nothing natural about that, because, again, your endocrine system is out of balance. By adding more hormones in, all that's going to do is kind of compound that balance and make it worse. So, you know, it's about the root cause again, and it's about what homeopathy says. It's about dealing with the root cause. And the root cause is you need to balance your hormones in the majority of cases. And if you balance your hormones, then your body's in the state to become pregnant. Now, also, what is kind of professed by homeopathy is, and I think I touched on this before, about getting yourself into the right kind of state of health, or out of the state of disease to begin with. So it is about lifestyle factors. You know, there's an epidemic of gut dysbiosis as well.
Yeah, completely.
You know, everyone's guts are off. Look at what we're eating. Even if you don't go to McDonald's every day, you know, there's a lot of alcohol consumption, which impacts what's going on. There's, you know, even if you're getting ready meals, even if you're eating high sugar diet, even if you're eating loads of carbohydrates, which a lot of people do because it's easy and it's quick, that's going to, you know, put your gut off. So there's
even natural food, like meat has got so much antibiotics in, and fruit and vegetables have got so much glyphosate. You know, it's all everywhere.
All linked to infertility. It's everywhere. It's insidious. It's in everything we do. And there's, you know, I talk a lot about the gut, and it's not just about eating healthy. It's kind of even more scientific than that, because there is a group of microbiome called in your gut, which are responsible for kind of the modulation of estrogen, which is one of your reproductive hormones. So if you've wiped those out by, you know, having gut dysbiosis, for whether it's from antibiotics or your diet, that's going to impact your estrogen levels, which then has an impact on your reproduction. So that's kind of one issue. If you're like highly stressed, your cortisol levels are going to be raised. If they're raised, then that's going to dampen down your estrogen, because they've got like a inverse relationship with one another. If you have emotional trauma, so this is the other thing that I see a lot of, loads of emotional trauma, especially women's relationships with their own mothers. You know, and it always starts from like a really young age. So because it becomes part of your the fabric of your life, and it's natural, that kind of, I guess, lack of bonding in whatever way, shape or form, it becomes natural for you, so you don't even think it's an issue. But that has an impact on your fertility, because there is, you know, there is a line, we've got like this lineage, we've got this thread that binds us, and it's not just biological. It's not, this is my grandmother because she's my mum's mum. You know, I grew as an egg in my grandmother's womb. I just, that always astounds me, but I just think it's so beautiful. And I grew in her womb. So whatever she did impacted me, which then, you know, ends up impacting my daughter and my children and then their children, their children. So when we talk about kind of taking responsibility, it's not just for ourselves. Mm. It's for like our future generations, because this is something that, you know, I find is really important as well. But sometimes it's difficult to talk to clients about, because it's kind of taking it one step further. You know, when you're focusing on fertility, all you want is a baby now. You don't want
to. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can relate to that. Yeah.
You don't want to hear about what your granny did. You know, it's not interesting. I find it really interesting, because whatever her state of health was impacted my mum and impacts me. And then we're getting into this territory of inherited stuff in homeopathy. Yeah. Which is, and it all links together. It's all clicked together in my head.
I love it. Like, what other therapy has the ability to heal, like, generational trauma? I mean, I just don't think there is anything quite like it that can treat acute things so beautifully and also go right back to, you know, pre-generational trauma. It is amazing. But do you know what? I'm just listening to what you said. I wish so much that I'd had a homeopath like you when I was trying to conceive. You know, it's really hard, because when you're, you know, I came from a stressful job, corporate job, all of that, and on the go, 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 go. And then suddenly you decide, you know, now's the time to have a baby, and you want it like that. You know, you've been told your whole life how easy it is to get pregnant, you know, got to take the pill or whatever to stop yourself, and then you just think that you should be able to get pregnant. And you know, I lost my first baby really traumatically late on, had a very awful labor with him, and I had definitely had PTSD, you know, and I was still trying to conceive. You know, after I'd lost him, I wanted to get pregnant again. And I was trying to conceive and it didn't happen, you know, and of course it didn't happen. Now I can look back objectively. I was like, there is no way the state I was in, like physically and emotionally ready to get pregnant. And it took, you know, a long time to then have my daughter who was born healthy, but she definitely inherited, you know, my mental state that I was in. For the homeopaths out there, you know, I was in an Ignatia state, without a doubt, which is a remedy that's great for grief and that slight hysteria. But you know, she inherited that, and I think, you know, I feel bad sometimes thinking, God, you know, what a horrible womb environment she must have had, being, you know, in my body with carrying that trauma. And I think if we can do stuff before we even have our babies, you know, what an amazing state they will be in. Having said that, all is not lost. You know, my daughter, she had Ignatia actually under her homeopath, and she's brilliant. You know, she had health issues, which I'm sure were related to, in part, to the pregnancy, or created that susceptibility in her. But you know, but it's never too late. I think that's the other thing. You know, if you haven't done this all perfectly, you know, we're kind of testament to the fact that you can still get healthy later.
Totally, totally. And I think that's really important to remember. It's not all is not lost. And I think, especially as mothers, we end up kind of feeling really guilty about things like this. Oh, I could have been different. But sometimes I think it's good to take a step back and think, well, actually, this is probably something that needed to happen in order for me to kind of learn and move forward. Because that's what you learn from these experiences that are quite, you know, harsh on you. And then the next time you're able to deal with them. And one of the things about homeopathy that I love so much is it allows you to be creative, you know. And my kind of whole thing about creativity is the ability to kind of adapt and get yourself out of situations and be able to come up with solutions. And I, you know, it's not about being able to play the guitar or be an artist or anything like that. And that's why I think it's such a beautiful kind of modality for people to use. And you know, just on that thing about inherited trauma and the difference, and I know this is anecdotal, but my eldest son, who's the IVF conception, has got, like, you know, some issues. He's got something called a retained reflex,
yeah,
which happened. So it's not the ones we normally know. It's not Gallant or Morrow, which people can be kind of quite familiar with. It's a reflex that kind of is formed at conception. And it's about feeling safe. So he doesn't feel safe. And it's really interesting because when my water broke, I didn't go into labour. So we waited 5 days before we called into the hospital. But that was kind of because we had Kemi with us and she was an independent midwife and she was giving us advice and guiding us. And we made the decision to wait. It was an informed decision. So we weren't just, we're not going in. But I ended up having, I've had to have a pessary. So I did have a form of induction because I just didn't start. I didn't go into labour. And when he was born, we didn't put that boy down for a good year to 18 months. And I remember everyone remarking, God, are you ever going to put him down? And if you look back at the photographs of me, I'm kind of, cooking with him on my back. I'm kind of hoovering with him on my back. Either me or Ravi had him on our back all the time. And people used to say to me, oh, you're so chilled with him, you can let him run off. But the reason I could let him run off is because I know that boy would not go further than 3 meters away from me. There is no way he would. He always had, I can see mum, I can see mum. So I didn't have that fear because I know he wouldn't go running off because he was so attached to us. And now he's, seeing a homeopath and he's seeing kind of someone who works with neurodevelopmental issues. And for the first time in 6 years, we've kind of seen an improvement in him. And what that neurodevelopmental woman said to me was 70% of my patients are the result of an IVF conception. So that,
I never would have realised that. Yeah, that is amazing. But actually, it does make sense. I've never stopped to think about it, but it is so... It's amazing, our IVF. I'm not for 1 minute slated. It is absolutely phenomenal. But I think it is so artificial. It's as artificial as you can get to create a baby. So is it not going to have some, maybe subtle implications of, later on down the line?
Totally. And I read an article a long time ago about IVF or what happens during conception in a natural kind of state, a natural environment. And they said that, once the sperm fertilizes the egg, there's a release of zinc. They cannot replicate that in IVF. They can't replicate that. If they did try and replicate that, they're adding something else into the mix, which is inevitably going to have some form of impact somewhere else. But I just remember looking at this image and thought, wow, that's just beautiful. It's like this big burning sun lighting up as soon as it, a sperm fertilizes the egg. What does that mean? And in terms of, if you think about vitamins and minerals and how they work in our body. So, normally with my clients, I try and say to them, right, let's focus on your diet instead of supplementation because everything works kind of in pairs or in a trilogy. It's not, you just add something in and you're cool. That affects the balance of all the other minerals and vitamins in your body. Mm-hmm. So, that zinc must have like an effect on everything else. And because it can't be replicated in IVF, what are the implications of that? And that's always stuck with me. I read that a really long time ago, maybe 5 or 6 years ago. And I've never like let it go. So I always remember that when I'm speaking to clients and, I say to them, these are the reasons you've got to prepare. These are the reasons you get yourself into this, amazing state to be able to, have a real positive impact on your own health and the health of your baby. It's just, it's so important because you're starting them off in such a, in the best way you possibly can. And that's why I'm just so into it.
I love it. And something you said as well really resonated, where you said people normally only come when they're desperate. I know that I only went to see a homeopath when I was desperate, and people generally, we're at the point now where I think there is going to be change in our health system going forward because there's such chronic ailments that, you know, really the NHS, you know, great for an emergency or surgery, but actually for these chronic issues, where can people get help? But wouldn't it be lovely if people didn't have to get to that point, that they actually took responsibility for their health before they got to that point, you know? And I do wonder, is it possible? Like, I know, I don't think I would have ever made a big change unless things, you know, I was literally about to step over the edge of the cliff and realizing actually maybe there's a different way, you know. Yeah. And I'm fascinated by people who can make that change sooner, you know, and it's, I hope, it gives me hope that there's hope more for you know, the wider society and their health. I don't know, what are your thoughts on that?
I think there is a change coming, because like we spoke about before, people delegate everything. And once you delegate, if you give away your responsibility, give away your power. And I think people want to take that power back, because they're seeing almost like a failure in the way that they're being treated for disease. You know, great, you're not having asthma attacks every 5 seconds, but bad that you are getting kind of other illnesses in conjunction with that as a result of the drugs that you're on, and bad that you're on 12, 13 different medications that are propping you up, when actually, if you kind of thought, right, let's take some responsibility and not rely on that, what can I change about myself? What are the triggers that are kind of impacting this? The minute you get that bit of power back, I think it's contagious.
Mm.
And then you're like, right, okay, what else can I change? What else can I change? That definitely
happens. Yeah, you're so right. I just got like my chills then, because, you know, when I started off on sort of the journey of trying to change, you know, it felt overwhelming as well. That's the other thing. There's so much information out there, you know, when you want to try and make a change. And yeah. But every little thing I did, you know, I first of all thought, oh, this is rubbish. You know, I still remember giving like the kids Epsom salt baths in the evening. That was like one little change that I made, which anyone can do because it's cheap and you just shove it in the bath. And I saw such an improvement from something so little. And yeah. Then you start doing more and more of these little things. And it has an exponential effect. And you see quite quickly like this improvement in health. You know, physically, I saw my kids, you know, the dark under the eyes sort of when looked less, like just looked more vibrant and healthy. And just from these small changes. And then adding something like homeopathy, which really has the power to really transform you on a much deeper level. And it's, you know, when you witness it, but you just got to take that first step sometimes, I think, haven't you?
Definitely. And the other thing that, you know, I was saying about the clients who come to me when they're desperate, they'll try anything. So but what happens is when they see those changes, there's just amazement. And I like one of my clients, she, so this is going back to treating, improving overall health. So when I saw her, she, one of the things she mentioned on the side, so this is the thing, she got used to being unwell. She got used to being in a state of disease. That wasn't even important to her, but she just mentioned it because when we go through consultations, we ask questions about everything. So, you know, I said, oh, you know, what about your stool? How about kind of urination? Oh, she said, I have a lot of UTIs. Okay. What do you take? Antibiotics. How long have you been having these? Since I was 4 years old.
Wow.
This woman from 4 years old, I think she was 36. 4 to 36 has been constantly on antibiotics.
Mm.
Constant UTIs. And I was amazed that it had been that long. And she hadn't ever tried anything else, even though the antibiotics clearly didn't work. She just kept on getting them. So in my head, I thought, right, this is what the issue is. The issue is the fact that her gut bacteria has been completely wiped out by constant, you know, antibiotic use. And that's why she's got constipation. So that's what we need to sort out. Let's sort out her gut first. 1 month later, she hadn't had a UTI.
Wow.
2 months later, she hadn't had a UTI. 6 months later, no UTIs.
Love it.
And, you know, and then she went on to start ovulating, and then she went on to become pregnant.
Oh, amazing. Love it.
And it's so beautiful to see, but you know, she becomes so used to having UTIs that it was just almost a thought.
That's something else with, because there's such an epidemic of chronic health issues, you know, kids, one in, I don't know, it's the rates are unbelievable, like one in 33 children has autism, you know, I think one in six, it might even be, I'm not sure the exact stats, but have, you know, a form of asthma or allergies or you know, intolerances, ADHD, you know, all these things that, and with, we almost have become conditioned where, because it's so common, we're starting to think it's normal, and it's not normal to be in bad health. And there are things you can do. But I think like this lady, you know, it's normal just to go to the doctors and get antibiotics continuously. I've been there when, you know, my daughter had constant ear infections. You don't know any other way. And I think that's what I would definitely want this, you know, stories like this, you sharing your stories, people realizing that there are other ways, but it's just not well known.
Yeah, totally. And I think, you know, we've got a big job to do to educate people about their options, and I think that's something I'm really passionate about. And if, you know, if there are loads of kind of case studies like this and you can demonstrate how you've helped people, then it's important to shout about it, because people need choices. And I think a lot of the problem is, if you kind of especially in this country, if you look at the kind of the way the media views homeopathy, it's always very imbalanced, one-sided, and a lot of the times untrue, what is said in the papers about homeopathy. Yeah. And that, if that kind of, you know, if that kind of is what creates your thoughts around it, then you're never going to even go there. But we need to kind of counter that with all this, you know, these beautiful case studies where we're kind of really helping people and improving their quality of their life, you know?
Yeah. Yes, yeah,
I don't think having a chronic illness and being on loads of drugs is living. I really don't, you know?
Exactly, yes. You know, we should feel vibrant and healthy and sleep well. We should feel full of energy. We should feel joyous and happy. We shouldn't feel flat, apathetic, tired, not sleeping well, on medication, eating crappy diets. You know, it shouldn't be like that. That should not be the norm. But that's how, you know, people are like, oh, I'm so stressed, my job's awful, this, that. That's become the norm. Like, we're completely stepped away from how we should be, our core, I think.
Totally. And then, you know, part of me is when, because when I said there's an epidemic of infertility, it's like the world kind of works. Everything works together, you know. Energy shifts and changes. It doesn't disappear. So we're living in this kind of, you know, this scenario, and we're living really unhealthy lives, then nature is going to create a way for us not to become pregnant, because what you're doing is it's not survival of the fittest anymore, is it? It's just, you're kind of having children who are sick, and then future generations become sick and everyone's sick. The whole point of nature and life is to proliferate. You know, it's not to kind of, nature never tries to kill you, ever. It never tries to kill you. It gives you the signs, and they're all around us. And that's not like wacky out there stuff. All you need to do is take a little bit of notice of what's going on. And you're like, oh, actually, is this happening for this reason? You know, even like if we're talking about something like climate change, everyone's saying, right, there's climate change, but look at the way we're living, you know? Yeah. It's crazy. So I think it might be really controversial for me to say that, but I'm a firm believer, and I'm going to say it how I feel it. And I feel that if we don't take responsibility for everything around us, starting with ourselves, then we're going to end up with kind of, you know, issues like this. But it's not irreversible. That's the thing.
That is it. And, you know, I remember going to a course, I think I talked about it before on my previous podcast, but with that, when I went on a 1-day sort of seminar on it wasn't even that, actually, it was a couple of hours. It was like life changing on raising healthy kids. And it was like, what's health like? And just that sort of penny dropping. And I was like, oh my God, you know, I've completely messed my kid up. She was 4 at the time. I thought, I've just ploughed her with, you know, Calpol and antibiotics. I've suppressed every fever. You know, I've done exactly what I shouldn't have done. And I had this sort of feeling of like guilt, horror, I've messed everything up. And there was a girl on this course as well, and she was like in her 30s, and she said, don't worry, she said, you know, I've been like that until my 30s and I've turned things around. She's only four, it's fine, you can change it. And we have. But that's the thing, it's not too late. So I think people listening are thinking, well, it's too late for me. It's not. You can make changes at any point. And ultimately, you know, I want my job to educate people on how they can improve their own health. I don't even want there to be a role for me as a homeopath, to be honest. I'd like to just everyone to be so healthy and I can teach them how to use, you know, their 18 remedy kit for acute, and that's it. That's like my dream.
I'm exactly the same. And I said this to someone else the other day. I said, I don't want to be doing this. I don't want to be doing this because ultimately there shouldn't be a need, and that would be the best place ever. And then we can, you know, we can just all be happy and joyous and healthy, and nobody needs to get sick and, you know, require treatment for long-term chronic issues. But yeah, and I totally get that, what you say about, you know, the kids. I felt guilty for various medical interventions that I used with Zor. But I think it's really difficult when you start off as a parent and you go against the grain.
Mm.
Really, really tough. I've got a lot of medical people in my family. And I remember my son Dyer, he had an ear infection for ages, and his ears kind of draining and stinks and it's really cheesy. So I'm trying all these remedies on him. I'm like, yeah, that's, you know, that's how pulse off. Nothing touched it. And then I sat down and I thought about it, and I thought, what am I doing here? And I remember my mum saying to me, Sapna, you're going to make him deaf. She's a nurse. So, yeah. You know, she's sitting there freaking out, thinking, oh my God, you know, my grandchild's not going to be able to hear. In my head, I'm thinking, well, he's eliminating. That's great. It's all coming out. You know, it's brilliant. But this went on for maybe like 2 or 3 weeks. And I just dug my heels in. I even went to the GP. And then the GP, I've got quite a good GP, actually. She's quite supportive.
Mm.
And she said to me, okay, I know you don't give your kids antibiotics, so I'm going to prescribe you them because I don't dish them out normally. But I'll give them to you. And I said, okay. And she said, oh, I know you're probably going to give him tuberculinum or something. And it went bing in my head. This woman is not a homeopath.
Did you? Oh, that's great. I love it. You've done your job well.
You know, she says to me, I'll give you tuberculinum or something. I was like, that's what I need to give him. Gave him tuberculinum. In the morning, he woke up and that ear infection has gone and it never came back. But
I love that.
You know, I was like digging my heels in. And it was really difficult for me because every member of my family was saying to me, no, you need to go and give him antibiotics. And for me, I was like, I just don't want to, you know, if I can avoid it, I really don't want to. And I am going to find this, and I can be really stubborn. I really
relate to that. And that's, I love the honesty as well, because I mean, homeopathy can be frustrating at some times when, you know, a remedy will work. There will be one, and you can't quite find it. And it's really, and then when you do find it and it just suddenly vanishes instantly. But I had a similar thing where I got stuck on Lanzarote with the whole family, because my daughter got an ear infection on the morning of the flight home.
Oh.
And I only had my basic kit.
Right.
And I tried, like, you know, ABC, Pulsatilla, nothing, it wasn't shifting it. And every, you know, I got to the point where even on, you know, homeopathy forums, people were saying, just give her the antibiotics because you need to get home. And I was like, I'm not. I gave her mercury, silica and Hepasulf, like as a trio in like constant, and it just went. As soon as I started her on that, it just instantly went. But there's that whole, there is that pressure of going against the grain, and that little voice that says, oh God, you know, could something serious happen if I don't do it? And I'm not saying there is a place, you know, for antibiotics, but you know, when you know that how beautifully homeopathy works for ear infections, you also know that actually I just haven't found the right remedy. So I just need to, I love that.
No, what I was going to say was, I think it's really important to kind of, that's a really important point, because homeopathy is wonderful and brilliant, but I think when you've got like a red flag, you need to go, it's a modality. You know, it's a modality, just like everything else. There's a time and place for conventional medicine. There's a time and place for everything. And this is what I kind of tell my clients from an education point of view. I'm like, homeopathy is brilliant. Try it. Take it on the way, but trust your gut. You know, if you're something's not right and you're like, oh, I'm really worried and none of the pills are working, what you're doing is putting yourself into a state of anxiety where you're not going to be able to think straight. Just go to the doctors and make a kind of, or take an aconite and then make a kind of calm decision about it.
And I love that. That is so important, isn't it? Like, we want integrated health. I'm conscious of your time, Sapna, and there's a couple of questions I want to ask, if that's okay.
Of course.
Like, obviously, there are thousands of remedies out there, homeopathic ones, but do you have one that you're particularly fond of?
I used to say aconite because... and arsenicum, because I used to take them everywhere with me and they seem to just fit everything. But now I don't think so. My new favourite remedy is rainbow.
I've never used rainbow. We even actually looked it up. Please tell me more why.
Rainbow, or it's called spectrum. But it's just this beautiful remedy. And I think the beauty of it is because it's so gentle, you can use it with any other remedy without contradictions. And I've been using it for myself and for Zor after we've had any form of osteopathy or craniosacral therapy, and I've really noticed the kind of difference with the body just almost incorporating those changes. You know, it's such a beautiful, I just love it, it's such a beautiful remedy. And now I've kind of got it on tap. I've got it all the time.
So what's it, what is it for integrating changes? Like, what is its main keynote, would you say? I know, like, they have broad action remedies, you know, for people not so familiar, but is there, I guess that's the question, is there a particular keynote where you would use rainbow
spectrum? Well, that's the one for me for integrating changes, because if you think about a rainbow and then you think about how we are, you know, on a more energetic level, and if you think about chakras and stuff like that, you know, there's always colours associated with them, and a rainbow is an assortment of colours. So it's kind of almost like bringing that back into balance.
Yeah, it makes sense. You know? Yeah.
And when you need to go, when you visit an osteopath, there is a, there's always like a physical imbalance, isn't there? But really it's an energetic imbalance. So just kind of straightening that out on every level will help support that change. And that's why I just love that remedy. In fact, I got prescribed that recently. So, you know, there was a lot of, on every kind of, you know, level, every kind of synergistic level, I think I was off balance from my intuition, physically, you know, emotionally, all of it. And it really just, it was actually amazing. It just made such a huge difference to me. And my homeopath doesn't tell me the remedies until the next appointment.
Okay, yeah.
That's very difficult for me. It's very difficult.
I have the same with my homeopath. She doesn't tell me either.
It drives me crazy. But, you know, at the beginning, and this is the important thing. So I think this is important to say about trust. And I think this relates back to what I'm doing as well. You know, I had to trust her, and that was a conscious decision for me. She said to me, this is the way I work. And I thought, okay, I can either sit here and negotiate like I normally do, or I can choose to trust her. And we had that kind of chat, and I thought, yeah, I trust you. And this is why I do kind of these three calls for my clients, especially when it comes to fertility, because they need to be able to trust me. Yeah. If we get on a call and they don't like me, or they think something's a bit off, they're going to tell me, you know, stuff that's the most intimate thing about them and their relationship with their partner. If they don't trust me, we're not going to be able to have that open relationship where I'm able to help them. And there's certain people that I've had to say, I can't work with you because, you know, something didn't feel right for me, or something didn't feel right for them. So, you know, when we were going back to saying there isn't a remedy for, I had a potential client, and she'd suffered from anxiety for a really, really long time, and she was on antidepressants. And these are probably one of the worst things, because they're hormones, aren't they? They're affecting your endocrine system, so it's really kind of a massive negative impact on your fertility. And we were kind of talking about it, and I said to her, you know, I do focus on fertility, but it is about your overall health. And I was mulling it over in my head and I was going over and over it. And then I thought, I can't, if she's not willing to kind of, you know, deal in part with the anxiety, and this is not a judgment on her, but if she can't do that, then I can't work with her because I'm going to be going round in circles. She's going to be wasting her money and nothing's going to be achieved. It is about committing to your health.
Totally. And being prepared to heal completely. And maybe, yeah, I know exactly. People sometimes, like, it can be hard to confront things like anxiety or, you know, to confront certain issues, but that acceptance that actually it's part of the whole picture, and you can't put it in a box and ignore it because you're treating the entire person.
Let that go, isn't it? It's scary if you've been on antidepressants for 20 years, the thought of not having those anymore and not being able to rely on them is really scary, and it's totally understandable, but it still requires a commitment to say, right, I'm going to deal with my health, my overall health, take that step to do it. And that's not an easy thing for people to do, and I've got respect for people who do kind of make that change, because everything in society is telling us not to. So yeah, sorry, I went off piste, which I often
I love it. So just one other question I ask everyone, you know, if you could wish something for humanity right now, any wish, what would you like to wish?
I'd like people to kind of wake up, you know. I feel like people are walking around sleeping because everything is done for them, you know.
Yeah.
I'm talking about every level of recursion. So, you know, your health is delegated in this country to the NHS. Your education is delegated to the school system. Your music choice is delegated to Alexa. You know, Alexa, do this. Alexa, do that. I find it really strange because everything is, you know, when everything is delegated, we're not controlling anything anymore. And if you don't have the control yourself, then how can you impact the outcomes of what happens to you? So, you know, I'd say I want people to kind of wake up and take responsibility and say, right, I am going to do this for myself, because amazing things happen when you do that.
I love it completely. And, you know, I think how sad if we were born to just go and work in a 9-to-5 job, you know, commute long hours, all of that. Just that's not, you know, and people are so desperate for their 2-week holidays because they want to that escape from it. You know, every day should be a holiday. We should be living, taking full responsibility and not outsourcing everything. And just, yeah.
Totally, totally. And, you know, I think the main thing is people think that makes their life easy. But actually, it doesn't make their life easy. It makes their life more difficult, because at some point on your journey, when you are on this earth, you are going to have to take responsibility for something. And when you're conditioned not to, that's going to make it so much more difficult. You need to be able to rely on yourself, you know. And that we're all individuals. We're all here on our own separate journeys. And yeah, we have relationships and we're entwined with other people, but ultimately we're responsible for our own choices and our own lives, you know, whether you're 4 or 44. And I think we need to kind of go back to that knowledge is inside us. Innately we know that we're the only ones who can be responsible for ourselves, and we need to tap into that knowledge and get back to, right, I'm going to do this rather than I am going to get someone else to do it for me.
Yeah, I love it. I love it so much. Yeah, I completely agree. So for people that want to know more or find out about you, I will put a link to your website, but can you just let people know where they can find you?
You can find me on Insta and Facebook, because I've got a bit techie recently.
Excellent.
And I'm the wild homeopath. So
love that, the wild homeopath.
Yeah, I'm just, well, I thought what kind of describes me, and I've always gone against the grain, so had to be wild.
And the world is, and what was that, there's a post that I posted the other day, without deviation from the norm there would be no progress.
Totally. I saw that and I was like, yes, My kids thought I was going mad just shouting at my phone, but yeah, totally. I think, well, you know, if you don't, if everything just remains the same and we just carry on, how do we expect anything to change? We need all these like crazy rebels going out there and saying, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to do something completely different.
Yeah, completely. Yeah. I love it. Yeah,
that's me. So, oh, and obviously the website. So,
and I'll pop a link to that. So is it just thewildhomeopath.com?
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you so much, Sapna. It's been lovely to chat to you.
Always. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much. That's good.